Hello, my friends, and welcome to Springwood, Ohio.
We're back.
Oh, yes, it is. Welcome to Primetime, the Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I am Enrique Couto here with Dave.
not your good friend, not your co-host, just Dave.
Well, I was trying to say who you are to me,
yeah. And
then I threw up a little bit. So that's what the pause was.
I mean, that's fair. I guess that's fair. I'll accept that this time. Just this time, though.
But how are you doing, Double D?
Not too bad. How yourself?
yeah. Is that what you want to ask?
I mean,
is that what you want to be doing when Jesus comes back, boy? I have had a tumultuous few days.
I'm very aware.
I would hope. Yeah. You're in my goddamn house. I mean, my dog has cancer.
He does.
Well, good to see everybody. And we'll be back next week. No, but my dog has cancer. And he just started chemotherapy yesterday.
But he's doing good so far. And yeah. He's been napping today and doing a little more as well. So.
Yeah, no, he's doing all things considered very well.
Yeah.
So.
He's a good boy.
I'm going to say this because, you know, why not? If anybody wants to help with the chemotherapy treatments, they're very expensive.
Yeah.
I do have a fundraiser going right now, which you can find if you go to weeklyspooky.com and click on Help My Dog. Aww. That's where I've set it up. If you want to help at all, anything helps. It's just, in this kind of situation, the only thing that really helps is to lessen the financial worries.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, nothing will make me have to worry less or care for him less.
Obviously, yeah.
You know, there's nothing else. But the prognosis is decent, so.
He's on the mend.
Well,
yeah, you know what I mean.
Listen, I, you know, you want to get dark? Let's talk about this for real. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I'm doing okay though, all things considered.
Glad to hear.
And I will say, spoiler alert.
Uh-huh.
This episode of Freddy's Nightmares kind of cheered me up a little bit.
I can see that because when I put it on a couple days ago, I was already excited because you know, Robert Englund directs this episode, as we said last week, which is already enough to get me to watch it, even though we're already watching
Robert
all the episodes.
Englund did this?
Robert Englund.
Oh, I thought for some reason I thought it was Robert Britton.
Robert Britton
who did this.
No, Freddy himself stepped behind the camera. And this is actually not the first or not the last time he's gonna be behind the camera for the show. He also is gonna return in season two, but we'll talk about that when we get to there.
Yeah, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
No, we do not, because so far we're doing pretty good on season one, and I've heard season two is where it tailspins, so we'll get there.
Got yourself in a tailspin.
But yeah, this episode was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. This is season one, episode 16, Cabin Fever. And remember, my friends, if you're in the United States, ustedes unidos, if you are here in the U.S., you can watch every episode of Freddy's Nightmares completely free with commercials
and captions
on. Well, that's by law.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the day that they made it a law that you couldn't release your movies on digital.
You say that it's a law that Tubi has captions, but Allie and I we found out that Wife Swap has a UK version and an Australia version. So we tried to watch the UK version on Tubi last night. It has the captions option, but it was not working at all. Same thing with Pluto.
But that's a tech issue. They're not going to get fined for
it.
Rude.
I wanted to watch UK people swap wives.
All I'm saying is it is literally a law.
Yeah.
So, and for like, could the UK people even tell the difference if they swap wives?
Dude, so I watched a couple episodes and it's very entertaining, but completely different. Like, Kitchen Nightmares US versus UK, where it's like, tonight on Kitchen Nightmares, you won't believe, and like all that. And then he goes to UK and it's like, tonight on Kitchen Nightmares, Gordon visits the Yorkshire Village.
Yeah. Just, the owner is very sad.
It's completely the same thing with Wife Swap UK and Wife Swap US. It's entertaining as all get out, but I digress. So, yes, you can watch these on Tubi right now. And if you want to, by all means, join us. But we are going to recap now for you episode season one, episode 16, Cabin Fever, directed by Robert Englund.
Wait, no. Cabin Fever was directed by Eli Roth.
But Cabin Fever 2 was directed by, actually, I don't
know. Ty West?
Was it Ty West? Yeah, it was Ty West.
Yeah.
Wow,
you are slipping in your horror fandom.
I for a second there, I was about to say Joe Lynch, and I was like, no, that's Wrong Turn 2.
That is Wrong Turn 2.
So I did know that. There is
kind
that.
Of. I like you were like, I had it confused with this, so I did know that. No, you didn't. You actually didn't know two things just now, is what happened.
Anyway,
but yes. Sorry, I'm in a bit of a mood, and I need this to be silly. So this is a pretty a fun one.
Yes.
So Robert England
directed it,
and yes. I don't feel like the audience here. Actually, no. So Robert England, he played Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street. He played. No, I think we know who he is.
1988 was when 976 Evil came out, and that was his first directorial debut. And the one thing that his first debut.
College he went to.
Shut up. Directorial debut. That is like the only other film he's done was like, I think, want to say 08 was Killer Pad. So England hasn't directed much, but 976 Evil. I don't hate the movie, but it's definitely one that hasn't aged super well. For both the story and just the
976
overall.
Evil, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
two is the one you love.
Love is a strong word, but I'm very fond of it
because Jim Wynorski.
Well, not because of Jim, but because I love Jim's mentality.
Yeah,
it's not just because of my man crush on Jim Wynorski. Which
that's fair.
I'm sure he already knows about it and hates it, hated it. But no. So this was shortly thereafter, right?
Yeah, shortly thereafter. So this is directed by Rhett Topham. He of course is the writer of Trick or Treat.
Written by. Yes. Sorry, what's his name again?
Rhett Topham.
Rhett.
Yeah.
R-H-E-T-T.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a friend named Rhett.
And he wrote Trick or Treat with Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne. He also did 976 Evil script and also did the pilot teleplay of No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Really? So okay. There were a lot of people that worked on that one.
We've got some good backgrounds on
this
one.
Well, it definitely sounds like Robert kind of stacked this with his
people. He knows, yeah.
Well, and that makes sense. And it makes sense that he would, that his buddy Rhett would have worked on No More Mr. Nice Guy because that one had like a lot of writers.
Yes.
And it makes sense that Robert would be like, hey, if you're why does he sound, he doesn't sound like Freddy. He'd be like, you know, hey, if you're working on this, you should talk to my buddy Rhett. He's very good.
Yeah.
You know, we worked together in 976 Evil. And they're like, we know, Robert, we know you made 976 Evil.
No, but so the episode opens with a wide shot of a passenger airplane flying over what we can only assume is Springwood, Ohio. Inside the plane, we meet Carl Ash, played by Brett Collin. 145 acting credits, this guy.
For wow.
145 acting credits, had stuff on there like Tales from the Crypt, Pre-Hysteria.
I love Pre-Hysteria. Pre-Hysteria is the film with the little tiny dinosaurs
yes,
that a little boy finds.
Just recently released on Blu-ray, too.
I have the Blu-ray.
Yeah, I know you do.
And I have a VHS of Pre-Hysteria, too.
Do as well.
Part two, not as well,
yeah.
But part two.
Part two.
Directed by the legendary Albert Band, mm-hmm. Charles Band of Full Moon fame's father.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Albert Band because he directed one of my all-time favorite movies ever, I Bury the Living.
Oh yeah, I Bury the Living. God, yeah, such a good movie.
Albert Band was great, and I've heard hilarious stories about how much he did not like working for his son Charlie and how he did it entirely only for money.
Yep.
Which honestly just makes me laugh a little bit more because the stories are incredible. Anyway.
So he also had stuff like DS9, The Replacements, Ghost Rider, and most notably he was in Narcos recently.
Narcos. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. I liked Narcos. And Star Trek Deep Space Nine is what he means when he says DS9,
yes,
by the way,
apologies.
In case you're not our level of total loser nerd.
So Carl Ash, clearly not a fan of flying. He's in the bathroom, sweating bullets and wiping down his face with cold water. Shortly, he is joined by Sue Collar. She is played by Leslie Dean, known as Susie from 976 Evil. She was in Girlfriend from Hell, Dynasty, but most notably known as Tracy in Freddy's Dead, Nightmare 6.
And I recognized her not from her face. Her hair in Freddy's Dead is super platinum blonde.
Yeah.
In this episode, her hair is like super dark brunette,
yeah.
But her voice is what gave
so
it away.
Clear.
The second
so clear.
I heard her voice, I was like, I know her from something. I need to check her out. So I clicked her up on IMDb, and then I was immediately like, yeah, she's the one who has the daddy issues.
Daddy issues,
Freddy's Dead.
Yes.
And she's one of maybe, so far, I think there's only been one or two people who've also appeared in a film.
In a film, yeah. We've had a couple people, like, just bit players in, like, part five, mainly. And I think we had one of the little girls was also played a little girl in, I think, part three it was. So, yeah, we haven't had too many. So it was nice to see her. So she, the two begin to make out in the bathroom as Sue tells Carl, welcome to the 5 Mile High Club.
And did you mention?
Did I mention?
That she's a stewardess?
She is a stewardess.
And it's the 80s, so
yes.
Stewardess is, I almost said, so stewardess flies. No, but that was not a written down joke. That was I made a funny. No, but yeah, they refer to her as a steward. She's a flight attendant. So she works on the plane.
Yes. So she welcomes him to the 5 Mile High Club just as rumbling starts to start in the plane that makes Carl uneasy, causing him to ask, what was that? The return to your seat sign lights up in the bathroom and begins to flash, so Carl straightens his tie and returns to the cabin with Sue behind him. Sue straightens herself up and then begins to bring out a drink cart and gives Carl a Bloody Mary before making her way down the rest of the aisle.
Now, first of all,
yes,
the humor in him drinking a Bloody Mary,
yes,
is not lost on me. I just want to say that very, very clearly, first of all. And also the pilot,
yeah,
before what's about to happen happens, they mention they're flying over scenic Springwood.
Scenic Springwood.
Springsteen. You almost said Springsteen. Folks, I may have said Springfield a few times, but I never mistaked it for the boss, David.
Listen. It's been a long day.
Has
Springwood.
It? Has it? How many of your pets have cancer?
Oh my, none.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
that's
I thought.
A harsh throw.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. But I just want to mention that they mentioned the hockey team.
Yes.
Which is the Springwood Flyers. Which was extra funny because the Dayton hockey team, which is the city we live, well, I live in this, you live near, is the Dayton Flyers.
Which they have a game going on right now because, oh my God, traffic getting off that exit was backed up like all the way almost to the Brown Street exit.
Oh, poor baby.
Mm. So anyway, the pilot comes on the PA and chimes in. They're flying over scenic Springwood and their hockey team, the Flyers, but we hear the pilot and co-pilot begin to discuss the engines are not responding on the plane.
they're like, and you can check out this and this. Oh my God, Tom.
Yeah.
I don't know if his name was Tom, but he's like, oh my God, Tom, the engines aren't working. They're not working. Yeah. It's really funny. It's very funny.
Breathing mask then drops from the ceiling and is good. And Sue begins to go through the process at the front of the plane and has donned the breathing mask and is going through the process of using them. But Carl clearly can't make out what she's saying due to the mask over her face. She exclaims the cabin has been depressurized and pulls the cord on the mat, and you can pull on the cord on the mask to get it working. Carl begins to mess with his mask, but shouts that it is not working. Sue continues with her spiel, not responding to him, and says, if there's an issue, check the emergency card in the seat in front of you. Carl grabs it to see it's all in Japanese, but also has a picture of a downed flight on it drawn and going over crash instructions.
Yeah.
He gets told by Sue angrily, staring, that he's holding up everyone, to which he responds that he can't breathe as panic sets in further. Suddenly, the camera zooms in, and we see that he was just having a daymare. As Carl is told by Sue, he's holding everyone up again, revealing he's blocking the aisleway as people are trying to get onto the plane, only beginning to file onto the plane and take their seats. An old woman pushes her way past him and takes the seat, and he takes his seat in the placement as the previous daymare that he was sitting. So he's in his seat and he begins to look around the plane and settle in, to which a nice woman behind him starts knitting, and the camera goes to reveal a gentleman staring at him.
Well, I want to point out, I hope we get to see someone smoking on the plane.
I was wondering.
Because that's peak humanity, is when you could smoke on planes. Do you know why they allowed people to smoke on planes?
Tell me.
Because all the air is filtered.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, wait, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, that's why they always allowed it until eventually they didn't.
Yeah.
Was because the cabin is literally constantly filtering the air. So that's why they were like, that's why you could get on some, well, now, I don't think it's as common now, but like when I first flew in the mid-late 90s,
yeah.
Sometimes I would get on a plane that had ashtrays still in the arms.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they're welded. They're still there, but they're welded shut sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember if they were actually functional, but they were definitely still there.
Yeah.
And all I could think was like, whoa, this plane is not new. So, and
but it sure is cool.
Well, yeah. And you know, they put smoke alarms in the bathrooms so that you don't smoke on the plane.
Yes, they did.
I once saw a great joke on Twitter that said, you know, The sign in the bathroom on the airplane says destroying this smoke alarm is a $5,000 penalty or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, by omission, that means I can destroy everything else on the plane with no punishment. And I was like, that man needs to be my lawyer.
That is very true. So we see an exterior shot of the plane taking off. Carl is awoken as Sue places her hand on his shoulder, startling him awake. She offers him the regular, and Carl responds with yes, requesting a double Bloody Mary.
Yes, indeed.
Sue tells him she can't wait to land and that she got a room in the same bed and breakfast in Springwood as the last time, and adds to him, remember the last time? But notices... Yeah. But notices that Carl is once again visually distraught by flying again. She tells him to repeat after her that flying is the safest form of travel.
Bitch.
Flying is the safest form of travel. But Carl interrupts that it doesn't help. She then tells him to think of the 3 blissful nights in Springwood, which calms him down a bit.
Mm-mm.
Sue asks him how his dad is doing, and Carl goes somber for a second as he reaches for a newspaper without saying any words, showing her the front page, which reads, "Air Parts Millionaire Dies of Heart Failure" on it. So Carl's father has just passed.
He's just passed away.
Sue apologizes, asking if there's anything she can do. Carl responds with, "Yeah, help me run the company." Sue responds with no thanks and goes to attend to the other passengers. The gentleman from before that was staring at Carl moves to the seat next to him and asks his name. Carl looks over, puzzled, to which the guy tells him it's been a while. Carl asks if he knows him, and the man, played by Ted Diemer, One Life to Live, this guy had done, Paper Chase and Snoops, he hadn't really done a lot on his resume, only like about four things from what I could find, introduces himself as Jim Worth, commenting that he used to work for his father as a plant supervisor for the factory in Chicago. They shake hands, but Carl responds he's never seen him there before, to which Jim adds he was fired a couple years ago and that his father made it a point to never employ someone who criticizes operations.
Oh.
So Carl
sounds
responds,
like a street shooter.
Yeah, Carl responds with that he does remember him, and also he remembers he was fired due to a drinking problem. Jim states he had a drinking problem, but if he knew what he knew, that he would have understand. Carl asks, what does he mean? And Jim responds, he's glad he's flying this airline, and but now you're in charge, she's sure he'll turn the company around. Will he, though?
I don't know.
So Carl agrees and moves back in his seat. As Sue offers him a refill, Jim requests a soda. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we then follow the camera as it pans out the window to Freddy on the wing of the plane, decked out in old pilot garb, stating, he says, Carl Ash Jr. is going to be sorry he ever flew the deadly skies uninvited.
I love this. The fact that Freddy is equal parts the creature on the wing from the wing of the plane, Twilight Zone,
yeah.
And Snoopy from Peanuts.
Snoopy, yes. The Red Baron.
He's literally got the scarf and the goggles. It's truly a delight. It really, really is.
There's something on the plane, bitch.
There's something on the wing,
bitch. So, back in the plane, the flight is still making Carl uneasy. Sue sits down with him to offer help, asking if he knows yoga. She tells him to relax, breathe deep, but Carl laughs, stating he missed that class. She jokingly says maybe a tranquilizer because he's making the other guest nervous.
And all I could think was,
fists with your toes.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Carpet, you make fists with your toes. Better than a hot cup of coffee. But all I can say is this is the beginning of my feeling like they're hinting that this is American Airlines.
Oh, no.
It's getting bad.
It's getting bad.
It's getting bad.
So suddenly the plane hits a small thing of turbulence. Lights flicker. She tells him, don't worry, because someday, once he retires, he can spend his life in a mansion in Palm Springs and won't have to ever fly again. Carl asks Sue if he can go talk to the captain because he believes that something might be wrong with the plane. But Sue pats his hands, telling him it's nonsense, and she knows how he is about flying.
Shut up, dear.
So Sue gets up and Carl takes out his airline headphones to try and find some music, but only finds nothing but static across the airwaves. Frustrated, he takes them off, cursing, and opens up his briefcase and removes a vial of pills, taking several and then several more.
And I want to say, there really is no better solution to your problems in or above Springwood.
Yeah.
Then some friendly tranquilizers.
Some nice sleep.
Yeah, you need to get a good night's sleep.
Uninterrupted sleep.
Some nice uninterrupted REM sleep.
So he puts his briefcase in the seat next to him, puts his head back, and drifts off to sleep. He's awoken to the sound of electric shorting out and looks down to see smoke coming out of a vent below his feet. He looks around the plane calling for the stewardess and pushing the button, gets no response, so he removes a small penknife from his briefcase, undoes the screws of the vent, revealing several rats chewing on multiple wires, shorting out in the plane.
And all I could think was like, this is the weirdest Ratatouille reboot I've seen yet.
The rats are flying the
rats
plane.
Are flying the, no, the rats are flying the plane under the hat.
Under the hat.
Yeah, yeah.
So suddenly a siren begins to sound and a red light fills the plane as he screams for the rats to get out of there. We then see an exterior shot of the plane flying through a cloudy, dark sky.
Oh,
so
you're
back,
a cloudy, dark sky in my life, David.
Hey, now. So back inside the plane, two passengers don ski masks and Uzis, shouting death to Ash Air Parts, and begin firing, killing the old woman who was knitting previously.
Yeah, and they've just got Uzis.
They are Uzis.
Spray and pray.
Them.
Spray and pray, baby.
More bullets spray through the plane.
Just, for real.
It was insane, because that was like right back from the commercial break.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrorists.
No, I actually rewound it because I was paying attention, and I thought I lost
something,
spaced out. Because it's literally like... And then it's like masked up. Yeah. And I was like, wait, when did the machine guns come into play?
Exactly. So they stand up, they got the ski mask, they got the Uzi, they're spraying bullets all over the plane. The terrorists take off their masks, revealing them to be a couple who Carl was blocking previously. One is played by William Shockley. He is the guy in the gang in RoboCop, not the one that gets shot in the dick, but the one that is threatened with "your move, creep."
Oh, that's him.
He also was in Showgirls, Suckers with Lawrence Tierney, and NCIS. The other woman is Kate Stern. The woman asks if they got everyone, and the man confirms, adding, "Glad we have a bargaining chip now."
And I just want to say, Double D.
Yes.
Just when you think Freddy's Nightmares has kind of done it all, we get an episode where a plane is hijacked by terrorists. And not just any terrorists, but inoffensive 80s movie terrorists.
100%. 100%. Because the woman begins to spray paint graffiti on the back that reads "Consumer Terror Squad." This catches sight of Carl, who's hiding, but accidentally spills his pills, getting her attention. She calls for the gunman, Ralph, stating, "They missed one," and Ralph makes his way up to Carl with the Uzi pointed, telling him to "get up, slug." Ralph pulls Carl to his feet by his tie and comments he thought they killed them all. Ralph pulls Carl's wallet from his pocket, realizing it's him, the chairman of the board, as he tells his other cohort, Abby. So the chairman of the board himself, he tells her. Carl asks what's going on, but is interrupted by Abby, who tells him to quiet up, calling him a death merchant, mind you.
I am very thrown by Consumer Terrorist Squad. It sounds like a place you call to complain about terrorists.
I could see that.
You know, like let's use it like, you know, just be like, Consumer Terrorist Squad, this is Tina. How may I help you?
Hi, Tina. This is David.
Hello, David. How can I make your day better today through terrorism?
I bought a iPod and it doesn't have a battery that works in it right now.
Was the battery meant to be attached to a child and explode in a car factory?
100%.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I am so sorry to hear this, David. Would do you have your consumer ID number? I'd like to just look it up and see if we have any open tickets for you.
Yes, it's 3B7189.
Okay, hold on 1 second, please. Don't know what you got till it's gone. David, are you still there?
Still here.
So I pulled up your information, and it says right here, I hate you. Okay, so that's the end of that skit.
Well played.
The best part is, as I started doing it, I remembered that you work in customer
service. Yes, yes, I do.
And then I was like, you know, I should have thrown it to Dave. But I think that's why you laugh so hard. You're like, that is my day in, day out.
So Ralph goes on to explain they are the Consumer Terrorist Squad, representing the right for people to have quality of life. Abby adds the court's in session, forcing Carl into a seat, and Ralph orders her to kill him. Carl argues that they're going to destroy the whole plane. Ralph holds up a bomb and says, no, but this will.
Checkmate.
So Carl goes to run as Abby opens fire again, taking out the lights on the plane and setting off the alarm. Carl runs to the back of the plane as Ralph tells him goodbye, laughing maniacally. Carl puts a fire out and cowers down in a corner of the plane as the PA comes to life mysteriously, stating, we have clearance to land. Prepare for boarding. Carl looks over to see the entry door is now surrounded by fog with a pink glow to it. He composes himself as best as he can and sits in the seat as a child's ball bounces into the plane with a bloodied little girl on a bike trailing behind
it. Yeah, and that dead little girl was so much more gruesome than almost anything in the films ever. I mean, the only thing even remotely close is that weird dead skull doll in part three.
So the little girl is played by Jamie Lynn Grenham. She played Sally in Chud 2, Bud the Chud. She was on Married with Children, is in a really odd 80s comedy with Judge Reinhold called Over Her Dead Body, and she also guest starred on Step by Step.
Have you ever seen Over Her Dead Body?
Yes,
that
I
sounds
have.
Really familiar. What's
I have.
That about?
That was where Reinhold wants to kill his wife so that he can be with his lover. They end up doing it, but then the wife comes back to life.
I think I saw that on cable.
Yeah, it's one of the other title is Enid is Sleeping.
Huh, because that one, I remember seeing two weird dead movies, which were that one And Ed and his dead mother.
Ed and his dead mother. I love Ed and his dead mother.
Of course you do.
Dude, that movie's great. So the little girl following behind asks Carl if he's seen her ball. Carl sits silent, a little shocked, and the little girl looks back going, oh, never mind, and rolls to the back of the plane because, once again, she's on a bike.
Well, of course, on a tricycle.
On a tricycle.
Yes, yes. A tricycle.
Carl begins to laugh a little bit in disbelief as he catches sight of Sue, who is now bloodied as well, who tells him to take a seat, please, as an elderly couple played by Regina Wester and Hugh McPhillips. Now, Regina Wester didn't have anything except this on her resume, but Hugh McPhillips was in Joysticks from 83, Bachelor Party from 84. They enter stating, this looks like the same plane we took last time.
Oh, my dear.
Carl asks Sue where they are as Sue shuts the cabin door, telling him to prepare for departure. At the front of the plane, several tombstone drawings are now drawn on the wall as Sue etches, rest in peace, Carl Ash, on the last one.
So the stamps on the wall that mark how many people have died.
Yes.
That makes me really think this is American Airlines. Oh, I'm just saying that that sounds like my last experience there.
So Carl looks around the plane and then out the window to see an old man outside who exclaims, oh my God, not you, Carly. It's a hijack, son. Help me. Help me.
Oh my God.
Revealing the man to be Carl's dad, Carl Ass Sr., played by Robert Simmons. This dude's resume was packed. He did, he started acting, of course, in like the early like 60s. 1975, he was in The Legend of Lizzie Borden with Lizzie Montgomery. 1975, he was also in Linda Lovelace for President as Uncle Sam.
I am familiar. I helped put that movie on DVD.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's awesome. He was also in one of my personal favorites, Superstition from 82, that crazy ass movie where that saw flies off.
Yep. Yep. That movie's insane.
Ice Pirates, Chud 2 as well. This dude has been in everything.
Wow. So we have two Chud 2 people.
Yes, we do.
Do you think he walked up to that little girl and went, ah, good to see you again after the peak of our careers.
Chud 2.
Bud the Chud. Did you hear the song? It goes, Bud the Chud. Bud the Chud.
And the best way that I could describe this old guy is like John Astin style of like
no,
Gomez.
No, he gave me a little, like, yeah. No, he gave me more of a John Astin in a Return of the Killer Tomatoes
vibe.
Oh,
yeah, I can see that.
Then, because, no, I definitely got a John Astin vibe from him. And him screaming outside the window of the plane actually was kind of disturbing.
It was disturbing, oh, yeah. So Carl is next seen trying to knock on the pilot's door asking hello. The little girl comes up asking if she wants to fly the plane with him because the pilot said she could. Carl tells her to return to her seat, but the little girl tells him, I can do whatever I want. Carl knocks on the door again and then sees a sign light up that says, return to your seat, Carl, or else.
I hate when the signs just have your name on them, and I'm even madder because when they have my name on there, I'm like, I know you custom made that for me. It's not like if it said Dave sit down, you'd be like, oh yeah, they got one for every day. But when it says Enrique sit down with an H, I'm like, all right, you win this round.
So the little girl rides up on her bike once again and then runs from Carl. He returns to his seat as Sue drops down a screen and begins to introduce the in-flight film Airport, which excites the elderly couple. I loved that.
Oh, I'm so excited about this film.
Which, if you're not familiar with Airport, it's a movie where there's trouble in the skies, the plane's gonna crash. It's a lot of those disaster films.
It's one of those like made for TV ish disaster.
Was it
a TV movie?
It might have been theatrical because that's Airplane. The movie Airplane is based off of all those disaster
because there were
films.
A lot of disaster films that were
Airport has like four sequels.
It was like terrorists on planes, and then it was like, you know, the woman has to be guided on how to land movies. They just kept making them. That's why Airplane exists, because they were just doing a parody of how there were so many of those movies.
So Sue interjects, but first, a word from our sponsors as an Ash Airparts logo fills the screen, starting a short PSA. The film shows Sue as she explains Ash Airparts is responsible for some of the greatest plane crashes of all time. We then see the elderly woman exclaim she had a whole 40 minutes to scream and pray before they hit the ground. It was exhilarating.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, I had an entire 40 minutes to scream and pray before we finally hit the ground. It's so funny. It is so quirky and fun.
Then we see the little girl who explained she was going to her grandma's during Christmas time. Santa was flying outside the plane and took out the engines on his sled. Suddenly, the little girl is next to Carl and states, I miss Christmas, don't you? Which startles Carl.
It would startle me too.
Yeah. The film ends with Sue's voice stating, Ash Airparts, the company that couldn't care less. And the film ends. Sue is then seated next to Carl as he begins to exclaim, it's lies. It's all lies. Sue pats him, telling him she knows it's hard to swallow. As Carl begins to go into a coughing fit, she asks, was it something you ate? As he complains about his stomach in pain and then begins to spit up plane parts.
Yeah, yeah, starting with like a long nail or a screw. Or something. Yeah, yeah.
So he spits up a screw. The little girl holds out a vomit bag for him. At the sight of the screw, though, she says, do it again.
Do it again.
The PA begins to exclaim that they've reached their final destination, the great beyond.
Uh-oh.
This is your captain speaking. Please prepare yourself for the great beyond. No, not the REM song. Thank you for flying Springwood Air. Thank you.
So, they're welcome to the great beyond. Sue thanks the passengers of Flight 976, and we begin to hear an eerie rendition of Auld Lang Syne as the passengers, except Carl, exit the plane.
Now, for those who don't know who Auld Lang Syne is, that's the song you hear on New Year's. A lot of people don't know the words to that song
I don't.
At all. I could tell. That's why I was trying to save you.
I know the one Dan Fogelberg song. I think it's New Auld Lang Syne. I can't remember. Or same old Lang Syne, where he falls in love with the woman at the grocery store and snow is falling Christmas Eve. You just don't understand good music.
So what happens next, David?
So Sue exits the plane, thanking him for flying as Carl makes his way to the cockpit to find Carl Ash Sr. flying the plane.
And I couldn't help but notice there were fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror. So this is 100% American Airlines. I'm done figuring it out. Mystery solved. American Airlines.
He then tells Carl that he's trying to get rid of the evidence and that all the planes they worked on over the years were fitted with third-rate parts. Carl asks his father how could he do it, and Senior tells him he did it all for him so he could live a better life, and all the times he was rebelling, he should have been helping his father. Carl begins to break down, asking why he didn't tell him, shouting he had no idea, as his father rattles on about how they cheapened out on everything from tools to the mask as well.
And I want to point out, the actor playing his father.
Yes.
He is just chewing that
scenery.
He's having
the best time.
And yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is like he could tell that he is so having a blast doing it, and I love every minute he's on screen.
So good.
He's so good.
So Carl Sr. tells Carl not to play innocent and that working in the stockroom, he had to know because he always told his father, Skipper, let the buyer beware. Carl Sr. tells him they can't land and they're stuck in autopilot as Carl runs to the back of the bathroom and cries while throwing water on his face as the return to your seat sign flashes on and off. Carl looks out the window in the bathroom and begins to scream as he sees the plane go upward.
Woo.
Suddenly, we see the passengers are fine as the plane has landed and Sue watches them leave out the door. So everything was a dream. She walks over to Carl to wake him up, telling him that it's party time because they're in Springwood, but he's not responding. Sue goes over to him as his head goes limp, falling and revealing the pill bottle is empty and spilled, and Carl has had an overdose on pills while in flight. Sue begins to cry, trying to wake him and shaking him, stating, you don't know what you meant to me, and continues calling his name. She puts her head on his hand, defeated at his passing.
Whoa. Died in his sleep.
Died in his sleep.
Who'd have imagined such a thing could happen
crazy,
in Springwood,
right?
Of all places.
So we cut to Freddie, who is in a cockpit now, who states, our friend Carly could use some spare parts right now, like maybe a brain or a heart. He laughs as suddenly his chair rockets to life.
Because he's wearing a helmet.
Yeah, yeah, he's wearing a pilot's helmet.
And now he takes off on a fucking jetpack.
Jetpack.
Freddie is the fucking Rocketeer, and I don't know if I've ever been this happy in my entire life as when I saw that.
And as he fires off, he says, the only way to fly.
And I
that is the A story of Cabin Fever.
And I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed it.
Oh, he's early.
Uh-oh.
I don't like this.
Oh, God. Here comes Freddy. Just play it cool, Dave.
Play it cool.
Hey, bitch.
Hey, Freddy.
Hey, Freddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. You know, I just launched my own airline company.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's called Airplanes Incorporated.
I thought that was going to be clever.
Yeah.
I had a marketing team come up with it. I originally wanted to call it Let Your Children Fly Alone. But they just weren't into it.
I bet not.
It doesn't sound like they would want to.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to do a little play acting. You guys are going to be some of my first customers on the plane.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Okay, Freddy.
All right. Thank you for flying. on Freddy's airplane. Don't you want to join the Mile Die Club?
That was good.
I don't want to, though.
No, that was good, though. I'll give him that.
You don't want to make out or anything?
No.
Okay, now it's... I'm getting less comfortable with you by the minute.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we're serving my brand new energy drink. Mm-hmm. It's called Freddy Fuel. All the energy, none of the crash!
I would try that.
Yeah, actually, could I have some? What flavors do you have?
Worm.
Why are we surprised?
And?
That's it. Worm.
Worm.
Okay, well, that's nice.
Is there caffeine-free worm?
No.
Oh.
But, okay, so, well, can we get comfortable now?
No, the plane already crashed.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess you could say you're both plane dead.
Oh, my God.
I have insurance. You can't sue.
I'm going to try.
I think, you know, in the realm of corporate America, Freddy, you're only medium evil on this one.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, like, kill a lot of children.
That doesn't move the needle one bit, pal.
Not one bit. Not one bit.
I hate being a small fish in a big pond. All right, I'm going to go watch Tulsa King.
Oh, I've heard that's good.
I like that show.
Yeah, Sly still got it. All right, see you later, assholes.
See you, Freddy.
Bye, Freddy. Well, oh, I mean, I'm glad he's expanding his horizons.
He's got a venture, you know.
There hasn't been a Freddy movie in a while. I guess he needs something to do.
Got to give him credit. I heard he's actually working on a TikTok channel, and that kind of scared me recently.
Oh, God. Well, it makes sense because most of TikTok's users are children.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now it's time.
Yes.
For the B story.
That is correct.
And for those who are uninitiated, on Freddy's Nightmares, they have an A and B story, but not in the way you may be used to. You see, on Freddy's Nightmares, the A story is the first half of the episode, and the B story is the second half.
Yes.
Because in some areas, they would only air the first half of the episode. So, the B story tends to be entirely self-contained and featuring maybe one character from the A story. And in this case, that's completely accurate. Yeah. Only one character goes over.
We got two. Because Jim, the guy that he was talking to.
Oh, I didn't make the connection because they just look like they just look like white guys.
It's like,
when we go to the mall, I think every white guy is you.
It's okay.
So it's just the way it goes.
So our B story begins as we are inside what appears to be, was it like an aircrew only bar? Is that what you picked up on or just a bar? Because like it had a bunch of plane stuff.
I think it was just a bar near the airport.
Just a bar near the airport.
Yeah.
So they're in a bar as the camera pans over to the bartender who's smoking with aviators, mind you. In the bar, has aviators. And he's
so
smoking.
Cool.
Sue approaches the bar, asking him for another, and sounds like she's already had a few, definitely.
Oh, yeah, she is drunker than a skunker.
The bartender, played by Jim Landis, who was in 976 Evil.
What?
The Lawnmower Man.
Ooh.
And Dream On.
Ah, okay, Dream On, that's my jam.
Informs her last call was 5 minutes ago as she gulps down the last of her drink. She moves away from the bar to a couple dancing and interrupts them. He actually like kisses the woman on the cheek and imitates a plane flying over to the jukebox.
Oh yeah, why wouldn't you?
Where she meets Jim, he asks her why she wasn't at the funeral, and Sue tells him that funerals aren't her thing, which makes him ask, but wasn't he your fiance? She claims she wouldn't go that far with the title, stating that they had some fun. She asks Jim if he'd like to dance and pulls him onto the floor. She tells him he dances like he's a married man, and he goes on to tell her he was married before to a woman named Betty, and she definitely reminds him of her.
And that's always kids out there. That is how, if you hear that, you are ready for a serious, good relationship with healthy boundaries.
100%.
If you hear that, you remind me of my ex-wife. My ex-wife used to say that. These are all what we call in the industry green flags.
Is that so?
Yes. Okay. Green means go. Now, if they, even better, if they say like, this, you remind me of my ex-wife and my bitch mother, that is what we call a double green flag.
Okay.
That's what's up. I just wanted a little help, dating advice.
I'm glad we could explain that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, of course.
So he offers to take Sue to his home where she can sleep it off. Sue asks, how does she know he's not some kind of weirdo? Yeah. He promises her he won't touch her. Warmed up to the idea, the two of them exit as she tells the bartender to hold her calls.
Which I thought was pretty funny because the bartender just rolls his eyes.
Yeah, rolls his eyes.
So now...
the camera pans over through the bar to a neon Miller Genuine Draft sign.
Freddie is so shilling Miller in this shot. It's literally... the set's so dark, it's literally only Freddy Krueger and Freddy. A Miller sign.
Yeah, he's at a small bar sipping on a beer, and he states... our little Sue seems to be looking for love in all the wrong places. A fly buzzes around him, lands on the bar. He crushes it with his hand and states, but I can handle bar flies.
And then he eats it.
And he eats it.
Because of course he does, because he always eats things.
He always does.
But I got to say,
yeah,
that's a damn good pun.
Yeah.
That's like a quadruple entendre.
No, it's
solid.
There's
an actual fly. There, she is a bar fly because she's like a drunk chick looking to get picked up. Freddie. Chef's kiss. That was a very good one.
I'm going to go after that still and see if I can get a framed picture of him just in front of the MGD sign because I fucking loved that.
You should.
So Sue and Jim are at his cabin. He talks about how Betty couldn't stand being isolated, which leads to the end, basically the end of their marriage.
Yes.
Sue jokingly asks if he takes free spirits here and locks them up. He replies that he takes them out to the wilderness and sets them free.
And I need to point out,
yes,
because now that they're mentioning the wilderness and stuff, that is because he has a rural
cabin.
Home,
yes.
Which means,
what's that?
That the title,
I know,
is a double.
I love that.
I love that.
I loved it.
The first half is in the cabin of a plane.
Yes.
And the second half is in a cabin in the woods.
Yes.
And I have to say that that's peak.
That's awesome.
That is peak. I love that. I love that so much.
So Sue asks what happened to Betty, and Jim tells her she died a year ago in an accident. They make their way inside the cabin. Sue wanders and notices a bear mount right off the bat, along with other knickknacks adorning the walls of the cabin.
Any paddywhax?
Paddywhacks, give the frog alone.
Just knickknacks, no paddywhacks. Don't give that frog alone.
Sue asks Jim what he does, and he explains he writes technical manuals. Strike one.
Oh, God. Technical manuals about my bitch ex-wife. That's it.
He offers up his bed and tells her he'll sleep on the couch. He then reveals that he snuck two airline cocktails out of the bar, and Sue calls him a thief, but Jim explains he's not a thief. He's a collector, but it's more than a hobby. In fact, it's a fetish.
It's more of a fetish, which is the weirdest freaking thing. Why did he say it's a fetish?
He goes on to say, a fetish, like feet or edible underwear.
Yeah, which I don't think edible underwear are a fetish.
I don't think so, but
I think
who
that
knows?
That's a kink, not a fetish, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to cut through that all. I'm going to let that go.
Sue comments he's weird, and Jim adds, but harmless. he offers to show her the kitchen, and the two are next shown sharing some hot cocoa by a roaring
and popcorn.
Fire.
There's a bowl of popcorn in there, too.
And a bowl of popcorn. So they're having a good time. Jim is told by Sue he wouldn't mind if she she wouldn't mind if he tried something, stating he brought her here for a reason. He tells her he believes women should be idolized and not treated as, well, you know. She comments he's shy and she likes that, and they both want the same thing. Jim asks what's that as Sue offers herself again. Jim tells her to turn in because it's 5:30 in the morning and she should get some sleep. He's going to go out fishing because it's the best time to catch them.
It is a good time to catch fish first thing in the morning, I guess.
He warns her that if she is going to go out of the cabin, to not stray far from the path as it's full of hunters who will shoot at anything after they've had their six pack.
Well, I mean... that part's accurate.
Yeah. So Sue wakes up on a bed and finds Jim is not home. She goes over to a closet, opening it to reveal multiple sets of the same shirt and same jacket.
This is what we call, again, ladies. Green flag.
Green flag, yes, entirely. Yes. On the floor, she finds a photo album and opens it to reveal multiple pictures of different women bound, gagged, blindfolded. She doesn't seem distraught by this as she comments, kinky, and
green
doesn't seem disturbed.
Flag.
Suddenly, the closet doors slam shut with her inside of them. The doors then creak open a little later to reveal three hooded figures in flannel telling Sue to get up as she lays in the fetal position at the bottom of the closet. My God.
Oh, no, he's a creep. I never would have guessed. No, sir. Never, ever.
The hooded figure repeats to Sue, and she says no. The man gets down and angrily tells her again to get up, but we then cut to Jim leaning into the room telling a sleeping Sue to get up as breakfast is ready, revealing the closet dream to be a nightmare.
Oh, and which is a nice change of pace.
Yeah, you know. So Sue goes to the closet, finds her shirt hanging in there, but no clothes of his and no photo albums anymore. At the kitchen counter, Jim has laid out a spread of breakfast for Sue to enjoy as she begins to dig in. Jim then enters, telling her good morning and holding up the fish he caught. He asks her if she likes fish, and she confirms that she does, and he tells her, good, you're going to clean them.
Now, before that,
yeah.
One thing you skipped over is when he says good morning.
Oh, good morning.
And she's like, we're in the country.
Tree.
So then he doesn't quite say it like you.
Yeah.
I don't know what accent that was. She's like, wait, we're in the country. He's like, good morning.
Good morning, Miss Carla.
Okay, that's just New England. What are you, feckin' retarded?
So she says, no, since he caught the fish, he's going to be the one to kill them. He jokingly holds the fish over to her, stating, they're already dead.
I love how he says it with such joy, too.
Yeah.
They're already dead.
So Sue laughs as Jim returns to the sink and starts commenting on how she's just like Betty. Betty also hated cleaning fish.
Green flag.
Sounds like you're doing green slime.
What is in this creepy guy's cabin? It's a green flag.
So Jim offers her to finish, offers her the porch so she can finish her coffee, saying he's got to clean the fish before they stink up the place. He asks her if she's had enough to eat, and she replies, she's stuffed. Jim oddly looks at her and states, no, we'll work on that later, and walks off.
Na-na, green flag.
On the porch, Sue sips her coffee but begins to doze a bit. Inside the cabin, she washes out her coffee cup and catches a bad smell. Under the sink, she opens the doors to find a tied-off garbage bag and pulls it out, dumping it to reveal multiple heads of fish and I think some of the carcasses as well. I think they were clean carcasses.
Yeah, it's like guts. Fish offal, yeah. Basically.
She begins to search the cabin for her stuff but cannot find it anywhere. After going through the closets and trunk, she goes back to the kitchen and lifts the lid on a freezer, revealing a body hidden under the frozen food. Naturally, Sue begins to freak out, and she hears Jim's voice exclaim, see something you like? Oh, I see you've met Betty.
And I just want to say that because he was talking about Betty so much, I figured she's probably chilling around there somewhere.
Damn it. You know? Good. I don't like you. So she tries to go out the door but finds it locked. Suddenly, Jim rushes in, stating he doesn't want to hurt her. He only wants to preserve her, save her from her destructive self. They begin to fight as he knocks her to the ground and drags her into a room, telling her he's going to give her some time to think about it. In the room, we hear flies buzzing as Sue begins to look around and revealing behind her a room full of women's bodies.
Well, I mean, it'd be weird if they were men's women's bodies. I don't know what that is.
Seated in a pose, and they all have like something over their eyes, and I think their mouths like were either
their mouths are like stitched shut or something.
Stitched shut.
And I have to say that this is kind of like one of the most twisted episodes you've seen.
100%.
Like it really is gross and creepy now. Yeah.
So inside the room, Sue tries to get out and finally jimmies the door open. She crawls out, carefully looking around as she hears someone whimpering for help. In the kitchen, the freezer is now shaking as a woman's voice shouts for help. Sue breaks the window of the kitchen and climbs out, running away from the cabin
and leaving
as fast as
whoever
she can.
Is in that fridge. Sorry, self-yeet.
Shaking it. Help, help, help. Smash. Out the door.
Peace.
So down the road away, Sue is walking when a red pickup pulls up with a deer carcass tied to the hood.
And is that normal?
In the country, they do typically tie them to the hood when they catch them.
Why wouldn't you put it in the bed of the truck?
Sometimes you have your hunters back there. I think it's also how they display their trophy to a lot of other hunters, because I've seen it in a lot of movies that take place in the South. I know for a fact, like it was a big thing in, they discussed it a little bit in Breakdown as well.
Dave lives in the country compared to me anyway. Have you ever seen anybody drive?
No.
Are there much deer hunting up by you?
Not much. Southern Ohio, where we used to go four wheeling when we had our quads, there was a lot of that.
Well, I would hope.
Yeah, there was a lot of that more so. But yeah, around my area, not so much.
Okay, I was just curious.
So she flags the truck down and enters, telling the driver that she needs help and asks for a ride to town. The driver agrees and offers his jacket to cover her up with. He asks her where she's coming from, and Sue states, nowhere, just a cabin back a ways. The driver asks if she had an argument with her husband, and Sue shouts, how could I be so stupid? I know better than to go home with strangers. The driver tells her that she's no better than a $10 tramp and begins to get aggressive, and she tries to go, and she's trying to get out of another commitment. She can only dump so many men before they want revenge, he finishes on.
I feel bad for her. This is a real Sophie's choice. There's so many green flag throwing men around here.
Right.
Like, who's she going to marry? You know?
Sue begins to go for the handle of the truck. She dives out to the side of the road and runs into the woods, where she comes across two men distilling moonshine.
In a moonshine still in Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess. well, okay. I don't know. That was a little bit like, I was like, what?
Yeah. She tells them she needs help and to get to town and offers them money as they look over with no emotion and just stare at her. Suddenly, the man appears behind her, the driver, holding a shotgun and explaining his boys don't talk much, and tells one of them to get a hose and the good stock.
Because they're going to show her. Did you remember what they said? They're going to show her Southern hospitality.
Southern hospitality, yeah.
Did the writers think Ohio is in, like, the South?
I think.
Or, I mean, are they the kind of Los Angeles people who think everything outside of the coasts is basically the South? Because we're in the Midwest. Like, when I think, I'm sure there are moonshine stills in Ohio, but when I think of moonshine, I think of my family in Kentucky.
Yeah.
I don't think about around here.
Justified, yeah. Immediately I go to, like, Justified setting and whatnot.
Yeah, you don't have family in Kentucky, do you?
My sister went to college in Kentucky, but no. But I have family from Kentucky, not there anymore.
And yet you know that little about shine?
A little that I want to let on.
The Denoyers were lame.
She tells them she needs help and to get to town, offers them money. They look back with no emotion, stare at her. The gentleman appears with a shotgun, and they get the shine ready for her. The young man picks up the moonshine jug while the others grab Sue. They begin to pour the moonshine down Sue's throat and state how she reminds them of that other girl, Betty.
Ta-da!
The boys release her as Sue drops to her knees while the driver tells her she's got 5 minutes head start before they're coming after her.
So, at this point,
yeah,
I'm starting to feel like we should just call this segment I Spit on Your Springwood.
Right? Like, yeah, 100%.
It's getting very dark very quickly.
Yeah. Robert Englund definitely knows what a woman's horror is in regards of the nightmare for this one.
Yeah. No, for real. But I still am just dying about Southern hospitality.
Oh, God. So the boys release Sue. She drops her knees and is running through the woods. She stumbles, stating that she just wants to go home before the boys pick her up and push her into the woods. Sue begins to run through the woods with the boys trailing behind her. They get closer as she stumbles to the ground but gets back up, running around a tree. Suddenly, Jim takes out her legs from under her and knocks her to the ground and tells her, "Don't make a sound. He'll break her leg if she does." He offers her two options, either him or them. Sue agrees to let Jim take her back to the cabin. Back at the cabin, Jim takes Sue into a room to reveal the driver and his sons with black hoods and a camera. Jim tells her love is a trap as the boys take her to a chair and begin to rope her down like the woman in the photo album that she found previously.
It's so dark, it's getting so
suddenly,
pitch black.
The sound of glass breaking sounds as Sue wakes up to reveal she's on the porch and that was all a dream.
A dream in Freddy's nightmare.
So she fell asleep sipping her coffee, startled by the dream, obviously. Sue goes inside to pack her stuff, stating, "This is not her idea of an R&R. I'm out of here." She leaves Jim a note in the kitchen and is getting ready to leave when she hears Jim whistling in the back of the cabin. Sue enters a room to find Jim surrounded by bodies of women, just like in the dream. She begins to scream as Jim runs after her, saying, "Was something wrong?" while putting lipstick on a corpse, also, mind you.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, what are you supposed to not put lipstick on a corpse, David?
So she runs out of the cabin into the road where she suddenly sees the red pickup with the deer carcass coming down the road, but she looks again to realize the carcass is no longer a carcass. It's her own dead body tied to the hood.
Which is a pretty freaky cut.
Yeah.
I like that.
In disbelief, she stands in the road as a truck goes by, knocking her to the ground, killing her on impact.
She got hit by a truck?
Hit by a truck.
Oh, dear.
God damn it. B story ends as Freddy is in his domain, and we pan to see that Sue's head is now mounted on a display in Freddy's domain.
Well, it's mounted on a poster.
On
it's
a poster,
printed on
yes.
a printed out poster.
Yes.
So, and
Freddy exclaims, "Everything's an endangered species these days, especially nice girls," and laughs. And that is Robert Englund's directed episode, Cabin Fever.
I like that all the other posters Freddy had were cute animals.
Cute animals, yeah.
Yeah. This was
My
a wild,
God, man.
Fun one. Man.
This was definitely one that I was excited for once I saw that Robert's name was attached to it. But even more so after watching it the first time, I was excited to watch it again because of how much happens with also the wordplay of Cabin Fever for the
Yeah, that was so clever. I really did like that a lot.
Oh, man, this was such a good episode.
I agree. This was a really fun one.
Freddy's, Freddying in it, I would give easily a high grade on this one.
Well, I would say I would actually have to give him a medium.
A medium?
Because he doesn't really pop up once they're in the country.
Maybe I'm being too kind, but I think it was just because the Red Baron bit and the MGD sign were just...
And the friggin' jetpack is
amazing.
Oh,
the jetpack, yes.
Yeah, but I do wish that, like, there had been, like, a little more, like, Freddy is doing this. Yeah. Like the one on the wing was great.
Yeah.
So I'm not, this is
he wasn't clawing at it like the hospital box.
No, that was amazing. Just stabbing it and sparks are flying everywhere. I love that so much. But no, I would say like if we're rating it.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm not going to give this an A mm-hmm. is because there wasn't enough Freddy
okay.
it for me.
Yeah.
But it's a B for sure.
It gets an A minus from me.
Whoa.
It really won me over the second time. I already really liked it, like I said, but rewatching it and then finding out that Jim was the guy on the plane in the beginning and how that tied into it. I liked the fact that you had two very different stories as well, because you had one that was a supernatural nightmare, but also played into kind of a reality tale, or morality tale.
Yeah.
And I was honestly like, it played out like a Christmas Carol, but then I was also thinking, it's like, can you imagine a Christmas Carol if Freddy's just all three ghosts, but just has like a different hat or like a different robe each time?
Yeah, and he just kills you in your dreams and dies anyway, for real every time. So.
And then you had like the serial killer, like this brutal serial killer story on the other side yeah. of things too, that also like dealt really heavily with, like you said, like I spit on your grave like territory, which yeah. I thought was super intense, well done. So yeah, I give this an A minus, and I'm excited to see what his season 2 episode looks like.
And I want to say my B is just because I wish it had been a little bit more Springwoody and yeah. a little bit more Freddy.
Yeah,
but it was great.
Yes, 100%.
It was a really good one, and one that kept, especially writing my notes when I'm in kind of a distracted state, it really kept my attention.
Yeah, no, it was really good. And it's one, again, like we've talked about this before, how episodes that you would want to get people into the show for. 100%.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one for that.
Yeah.
So anything else you got to say, David?
That is it.
Well, what's
but,
next week?
Next week we have season 1, episode 17, Love Stinks, directed by John Lafia. Now, if that name sounds familiar, he was the director of Rebel Without a Car.
Yeah.
Also the director of Child's Play 2 and Man's Best Friend.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
Episode next week stars this up and coming actor. You might not have heard of him. Jeffrey Combs.
You mean Jeff Puffy Combs?
Jeff Puffy Combs.
I hope he doesn't hear me make that joke because I feel like he won't like it. Well, I love Jeffrey Combs.
Yes.
I worked with him on
yes,
a film called The Sorcerer Beast.
You got to eat Denny's with him.
I ate Denny's with Jeff Combs and it was awesome. So that'll be next week. I also want to mention that I appeared on This Week in Geek
yes.
last week. And that will be not only available at thisweekingeek.net, but I'm also going to do a feed drop. So that episode will
oh, yeah.
be on this feed.
Okay.
So if you want to listen to me be interviewed by my good friend, Mike,
awesome.
You can. And, but now I think it's time we make our exit.
Yes, sir. And real quick, if you want to learn more about the show and keep up to date on our releases, follow David's Watching Movies at Instagram. That's where our official Instagram is for the Nightmare Podcast right now.
And you can find everything else at freddysnightmares.com. I've been Enrique Couto. This has been Double D, David the Noyer.
Yes, I have.
And make sure to come back next week. If you want to email us, reach out and cut someone, you can go ahead and send us one at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. We look forward to seeing you all next Tuesday. But until then, pleasant dreams or something.
Don't fall asleep.
Yeah, for real. We're out.